Listener Production.
Hi, Gistners. Rosie here. And, you know, we've been doing Just the Gist for quite a while now, which means we have ended up with a pretty big back catalogue of amazing, greatest hits kind of stories. Oh my gosh, I love saying back catalogue. It makes me feel like Mariah Carey. And so we figured it might be time to start republishing a couple of our favorite greatest hits, because there's so many new Gistners since when we started, and also it's been so long since some of these that a lot of you haven't heard some of the really cool stories we've done, and a lot of you forgot that, you know, the ones from a couple years ago even happened. Someone tagged me and said, I loved that story you did about XYZ the other day, and I was like, oh my god, I forgot I even told that story. So we thought it might be time to revisit some of our favorite hits, and starting today with one of my all-time favorite Just the Gist that I did. A lot of people tell me that this is still their favorite one that I've ever done. This is the horrifying story of the 1981 Trashman yacht sinking. Now, this is unhinged. It's deranged. It's been called one of the worst shark attack stories of all time. This yacht sinks. There's five crew members. Sharks start circling them. The crew members are getting chopped off one by one. There's starvation. There's thirst. People are going crazy, zombifying. It's nuts. It is just epic thing after epic thing after epic thing. You'll be on the edge of your seat. This is one of my favorite greatest hits from the back catalog. Ooh, I'm like a pop star. This is the horrifying story of the 1981 Trashman yacht sinking. Okay, so I don't know how to describe this one. Look, normally I would give you a bit of a taste of where the story is going, like at the top. But this one is just so crazy. Like, I think to reveal anything up front, it just feels like the wrong way to do it. Like, I think you just need to experience this crazy story as it unfolds. But I will say that a boat sinks, people die, there's shark attacks, there's being stranded in the ocean. There's people getting delirious and acting like zombies. Like, buckle in. This is a wild ride. Are you ready for this?
I'm actually really keen for this. Yeah.
I just thought, let's do a fun, crazy, weird survival story. Okay, so it's October 1982.
Oh, I thought this was going to be like pirate era. The 1600s or 1700s or something. Oh, this is closer to like the Ruby Princess type boat.
Yeah, this is like shoulder pads, Wham, Princess Diana just got married, I think. It's all around then. It's all happening. 80s. Oh,
okay, so here for this, yes.
So a billionaire who made his money in the rubbish business but has just bought an 18-metre luxury yacht and named it the Trashman. As billionaires do. I was reading that it was called the Trashman and I was so confused. I was like, I bet whoever bought that like owns a rubbish collecting company, and he does. As billionaires, you know, tend to do, he bought it, I think, without really knowing what the hell to do with it. He didn't know how to sail it. So he hires a crew to sail the yacht from where he bought it in Maine to where he lives down in Florida, which is kind of like going sailing from, I would say, Brisbane to like Tasmania, or like all that way. It's quite a long way. It takes about 6 days. So there's a captain, a guy called John, and there's crew members Mark, Brad, and Deborah, plus Captain John brings along this new girl he's dating called Meg. And they're all in their like mid to late 20s. They're all pretty experienced sailors. Deborah especially had just the year before been the first woman to win the Whitbread Round the World Yacht Race, which sounds like something only very rich people called, you know, tipsy and Gordon Rambunctial Pitt do. The only one who doesn't know anything about sailing or has any experience is Meg, the captain's girlfriend. She's like pretty much never sailed before. She's just there for the ride, for the fun, because it is a really fun thing to do. And this kind of thing is often how experienced sailors would make money when they weren't racing. Like, people hire them to just, can you take my yacht from point A to point B? Like, That's yep. Can you crew my yacht for this, whatever? Mm-hmm. And so this particular trip, like I said, it was going to take about 6 days, and you sail and it's beautiful and you swim and you chill. Like, you're pretty much being paid to just be on a luxury yacht for 6 days. It's a mm-hmm. good gig. But Deborah immediately notices that things aren't ideal. The yacht just doesn't really seem to be kitted out properly. Just all seems a bit dodgy. Also, Captain John seems lazy. He just kind of wants to hang out with his girlfriend Meg. And Mark, one of the other dudes, he just wants to get pissed and party. Like, he's just drinking all the time. So she kind of feels like she and Brad are the only ones who are like, yes, we can have fun, but also sailing is serious and dangerous and we, you know, need to just keep our wits about us. But then she's like, you know what? It's 6 days and it's good money. I don't have to sail with them ever again after this, so just get through it. Mm-hmm. And I will say at this point that Deborah survives all of this. I won't tell you if anyone else does, but this whole story is pretty much told from her point of view, because she went on to write a book about it, and there was a couple of, like, Lifetime TV movies about it, one starring Melissa Joan Hart.
I was thinking about her just yesterday, and I used to love it so much when she would get called out on other shows for how terrible she was as an actor.
Aww, bless her heart. She did her best.
It was just remarkable that she just continued to get work.
I know,
time and time again.
Really,
I'm not surprised that she ended up doing Lifetime movies.
And do you remember in, I think it was the 2000s, where she and Joey Lawrence did a sitcom called Melissa and Joey, and it was basically just like two washed-up sitcom stars. Like, maybe if we do it together, people will watch. They didn't.
I'm going to hunt that down because I actually
Melissa
really
and Joey.
Want to see that. Love.
So I watched Deborah tell this story on this amazing cheesy show called I Shouldn't Be Alive. And you know I love shows like this. I watch them all the time. I watched it in Australia on Amazon Prime. Mm-hmm. So the first night they're out in the ocean, a storm hits, which was unexpected because it wasn't on any one of their printed out weather predicty things that they had. Because this was 1982, so nothing was computerized. Like, before you leave, you print out your weather predictions, you print out your stuff, and you take paper versions with you. The waves are like 40 to 50 feet high, which I looked up, it's about 10 to 15 meters. Deborah said it feels like, you know, it's like a roller coaster. You go up and up and up and up, and then you drop. And you know that feeling when you drop, it's like your stomach doesn't drop as quickly as you, and you get that, and storms, she said, are often quite fun for experienced sailors because it's like, you know, a bit different. You challenge yourself. It, like, breaks up the monotony. But Mark is super drunk, and she's like, he's up on deck howling like a cowboy, having the best time. Captain John's also a bit drunk, and he's brought his girlfriend Meg up on deck, and then she fell over because she wasn't used to being on, you know, in conditions like that. She hurts herself really badly. She's screaming in pain, but they can't really figure out where she's hurt herself or what's happened. And Captain John is like, okay, we should probably try and go in to shore tonight at least, because Meg's hurt. But then he goes and checks, and he hasn't actually brought any maps for this particular part of the coastline. And Deborah's like, oh my God, you were so unprepared. Like, she's like, this is just, I'm really regretting doing this. And then the yacht's sails rip off in the hurricane level wind. And so yachts have an engine, but it's really only powerful enough to sort of, you know, drive you from a dock to somewhere. Like, you're not meant to use a yacht's engine out on the ocean. Yep. And so Captain John is like trying to get the engine to start, but it overheats. It doesn't work properly. It's a crappy engine, which is another thing he should have checked before they left, but he didn't because he's a crappy captain. So now they have no sails. They have no engine. They need the engine to send out, like, that runs the battery of the radio. So they need that to send out distress calls or whatever. And they're just floating in the ocean in the middle of this storm. And Mark, the drunk one, is the one steering the yacht. And Deborah said he's holding a bottle of scotch and laughing like a maniac and just having the best time. And Meg is still howling in pain. And so Captain John is like, okay, we need to call for rescue. Like, we better do it now because who knows how long the battery will last now that the engine has gone. But none of them really want to do it because they're all like apparently it's like a thing of pride among boat people. Like, you get yourself out of your own mess. Like, don't call for rescue, just call. But he's like, no, we've got to. So he calls for rescue. And then not long after that, this freak
wave comes. And they don't quite, normally the waves come, you ride them and then you go over the other side. But this wave is so huge that they ride it. They don't make it over and it smashes into the yacht, smashes all the glass in the front of the yacht and water just starts pouring inside immediately. They start taking on water fast. And Deborah's like, okay, this boat is going to sink in 2 minutes. Like we need to get off this yacht. And so they have a life raft that's in one of those pressurized plastic boxes. Like, you know, it kind of looks like an esky. And when you push whatever button, it goes
like a big airbag. Yeah.
Blows up. Yeah. Like an airbag. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And inside that, there's like food and a beacon and little machine that turns salt water into regular water. So if you, it basically is built for you to be on the ocean for a while. Mm-hmm. And the only other thing they have is this little inflatable dinghy, one of those ones that kind of has the two like collar, like air-filled tire columns and then a little bit in between. And that little dinghy is essentially just the thing that you use to go from a dock out to the yacht. So you know how a yacht is usually anchored like 20 meters off the shore and then you get in your little dinghy, you go out to the yacht and then that's it.
That's called a tender.
Oh, is it? Look at you. Well, I'm going to keep calling it a dinghy because that's what I've written here and otherwise I'll get confused. So they all jump into the water. The crappy dinghy's there and Mark is the one who's holding on to the life raft, like esky box. He jumps into the water. He manages to, like, pop it open. So like an airbag, it like opens up. But then because he's a bit drunk and the waves are, like, big and it's stormy, a wave comes and he just lets it go and it floats away into the night.
Oh, no.
And it's pitch black and it's gone. And so Captain John, Brad and Deborah are in the crappy little dinghy. And when I say in, I mean on because it's upside down. So they're just clinging to the sides. And Mark swims over to them, having just lost the life raft. And then they're like, oh, shit, where's Meg? And they're all experienced sea people. So as soon as the yacht started sinking, they just went into autopilot, knew what they had to do, jump off, try and get the life raft, get the dinghy. And then they look back over and they see Meg is holding on to the very last bit of the yacht that's going down, kind of like Jack and Rose at the end of Titanic. Like she's standing there like, guys. And she's screaming and she's too scared to let go. And she's in so much pain from having hurt herself earlier. And Deborah says the men just all freeze. They don't know what to do. And she's like, of course, because boss bitch woman, she's like, fine. And so she swims over, like, because she's experienced in the waves and in the water, so she knows, grabs her, pulls her back over to the dinghy, just as the yacht completely disappears beneath the water. And so it's pitch black. The water is freezing. The wind chill is even colder. There's crazy rain and wind and waves. They're worried they'll die of hypothermia, so they all get under the dinghy because there's like an air pocket in there. Mm-hmm. And they kind of just lay next to each other like logs, like to sort of share body heat. And that's how they survived the night. And when they have light in the morning, the wind is still raging, it's stormy, but they decide to flip the dinghy over to at least get out of the cold water. And they throw Meg in the dinghy first and they all clamber in and that's when they see for the first time just what her injuries are because her pants have all kind of come off. And they see that when she fell, wire from the rigging of the yacht had run along her legs and slash them down to the bone in several places. Which reminded me of, like, you know, that's, have you seen Hereditary? That scene in the end of Hereditary with Toni Collette?
No,
for people
I haven't.
Who've seen it, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
No, I'm not going to watch it.
Anyway, so she's got wounds all over her. And Deborah said she was heartbroken when she looked at her because she was like, those wounds are a death sentence. Unless we get rescued in the next hour, like, she's effed. But she doesn't say anything to her. She's already panicking so much, so she just leaves it. So Deborah and Mark jump into the water and they're trying to keep the dinghy steady because there's still a lot of waves and it's this crappy little inflatable thing. So they're like in the water holding onto the sides of the dinghy trying to keep it from tipping over. And then Mark turns to Deborah and he says, stop kicking my leg. And she's like, what? And he goes, stop kicking my leg. And she's like, I'm not kicking your leg. And then she moves away from him to prove she's not kicking his leg. And then he goes, I said, stop it. But then they both look at each other and they're like, oh, you're too far away. And then she dips her head underwater and she said, I swear to God, it was hundreds of sharks. Like more sharks than I have ever seen in my life. Like a swarm surrounding us. She said she'd never seen that many in one place before. So they scream like sharks, and her and Mark scramble to get into the boat. And she said they were circling them like fins, like the fins were up just circling them, like hunting them. And so they're so scared the dinghy is going to tip at this point because they can't stay in the water to hold it because of the sharks. So they find this sort of bit of metal in the bottom of the dinghy and this kind of like metal plate that, I don't know, was part of something. And they're like, well, let's tie this to a piece of rope attached to the dinghy and put it in the water so it can sort of act like an anchor that will keep us at least steady on the water. So they tie this metal sheet thing. It's kind of the size of a dinner tray. They tie it to the rope. They throw it in the water. The second it lands in the water, Deborah said it was the biggest great white shark she'd ever seen, swam over, grabbed it in its mouth and just started pulling them like a tugboat. And so they're getting dragged along behind this shark. And then he starts swimming really erratically. They're like, oh, my God, he's trying to tip this boat over. And so they have to cut the rope. So they cut the rope. That goes. I know. It's. I told you, it's a wild ride. It is a wild ride. So because they don't have that anchor, they can't get out of the water. The dinghy is just rocking precariously, like, every wave could be the one that just tips them over. And so they float in the middle of the ocean all day and then they're into night two. And night two was torturous for a few reasons. I mean, they're freezing, obviously. They haven't eaten or drank water for, you know, more than 24 hours now. And they keep seeing the lights of ships and a couple of them want to, like, try and paddle towards the ships. But Deborah's like, it's pitch black in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. We can see them, but they cannot see us. Like, we're not going to get to them. Paddling towards ships will just waste energy that we don't have, like, because we're not eating, we're not drinking. And then it would rain and they were so desperate to drink, so they'd all, like tip their heads toward the sky and open their mouths, like trying to catch rainwater to drink. But the wind was so bad that it would just blow it, so none of the rain was actually getting in their mouth. So it's like getting taunted with a little bit of water on your tongue but not actually getting to drink anything. One of the, Deborah said it was like God was spitting on us. And so then they spend the rest of that night trying to sleep, but every time they'd get close to falling asleep, the dinghy would get bumped and they'd look in and see a fin in the water because sharks were, like, constantly bumping the dinghy all night, like, trying to, like, you know, I guess tip it over, I'm not sure.
They stuck with them for that long.
Yeah.
Just, taunting them. Was Meg still alive at this point?
Oh, yeah. So the next day, things are looking very grim. It's boiling hot during the days. As cold it is as it is at night, it's boiling hot in the day. The sun is beating down on them. They're starting to suspect that that Mayday call that they got put through just never maybe went through because they were like, if it did, the Coast Guard would have found us by now. They're worried that maybe, like, the radio just wasn't working and that, but they're freaking out. The bottom of the dinghy is filled with, like, this layer of putrid water that's made up of blood and urine and pus from Meg's wounds. And it smells, and they're all in a lot of pain, and they're all starting to get staph infections because the bacteria from the water is getting into all their wounds. And Meg is pretty clearly dying of blood poisoning, Deborah says. Like, she's not in a good way. So things are not great. They're not ideal, Jacob. Survival instincts kick in at this point and alliances start to form. So Deborah and Brad are down one end of the dinghy and Captain John, Mark, and Meg are down the other, and they formed like these two little opposing groups. And Deborah said that she and Brad decided to look out for each other because they were like, we need a purpose. So if my purpose is to make sure you are safe and yours is to make sure I am safe, that will give us some kind of motivation to survive.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, the other three down that end were just losing it. Like Meg is wailing in pain. She can't really move. John and Mark alternate between screaming and crying. So that's the dynamic as we head in to night three. Everyone's just feeling a bit delirious, exhausted. And Deborah and Brad are sleeping down their little section of the dinghy, and they wake up in the middle of the night to see Captain John and Mark drinking seawater, like just shoveling it into their mouths like they're possessed, crazed, shoveling it in. And they're like, guys, stop, stop. You can't drink seawater, because drinking seawater is the worst thing you can possibly do. It makes you even more dehydrated because it's filled with salt. It also messes with your kidneys and liver. It very quickly makes you delusional and you will end up dead. And it's the most torturous thing, because when you're stuck out at sea and you're dying of thirst, you're surrounded of water that you can't drink. But like Deborah said, it was like they had just snapped mentally and they were just shoveling it into themselves. And she's like, oh my God, they are going to lose it. Which they do. So over the course of that night and the next day, Captain John and Mark start to completely unravel. They start talking to themselves. They're having full conversations with people who aren't there. They're reverting back to being like little toddlers. Sometimes they're behaving like animals, like literally growling on all fours. They'll like cry and laugh maniacally, like within the space of 30 seconds. They keep convincing themselves they can see land. Like, it's very scary. And Deborah says it's like watching a movie of crazy people, but she made a conscious decision to ignore it because she's like, if I'm arguing with them all day and constantly explaining to them, no, there's not land over there. No, you're not at your grandma's house. She's like, it'll just waste my energy and I can't. I need to conserve my energy. So she says she and Brad just had to sit back and watch as they just completely mentally broke down. And then all of a sudden, Captain John says, hey guys, I'm just going to get my car. I'll be back in 1 second. And he steps off the side of the dinghy.
Oh no.
And they're like, dude, what the F? Get back in. And he swims about 5 meters away from them. And then he sort of, they can't really see him through the waves. And then they hear this blood curdling scream. They see him jerk up and then he disappears under the water. And a shark got him. And that's when they realize the sharks haven't attacked us, because they've been here the whole time like vultures. They're just waiting for us to die. And they float there for a few more hours in silence. Captain John's gone. Meg is despondent because he was her boyfriend, the only person she knew. Then Deborah wakes up later that day and sees that down the other end of the dinghy, Mark, who has also completely lost his mind, this is awful, is attempting to, or what looks like he's attempting to sexually assault Meg. So he's telling her like, oh, babe, like kind of like he's met a woman at a club, he seems to think in his mind. He's like, you know, oh, I think you're so hot. You know, I wanted you from the moment you got on the yacht. Like, I can make you feel good. Like, let me do this. And he's trying to untie her pants. And Meg is just paralyzed. She's got blood poisoning. She's practically comatose. And so she's just sitting there still while Mark is like acting completely bizarrely. And so Deborah wakes up Brad. She's like, we've got to do something. So they start yelling at him like, stop, stop. And then he turns to them and he says, yeah, okay. I'm just going to go to the 7-Eleven and get more beer and cigarettes. And then he stands up, steps off the side of the boat. And what happens next is petrifying, because they'd got a taste of Captain John just a few hours before, like they were on it this time. The second he stepped into the water, he is grabbed, he screams, they pull him under. Deborah says the boat starts shaking like, you know, they're in a washing machine. The water around them is bubbling like a spa bath and it goes a deep red. And they're like, oh my God, like he's literally being torn to shreds directly beneath us. And after that, the sharks become way more brazen. They've got a taste. They've eaten two dudes now, and they're like, they just want to eat more. So now they start actually trying to tip the boat over. Uh-huh. They're like going at it and banging it and trying, and they don't feeding know what to do. So they just, they just all curl up and sleep. That night, Deborah and Brad are woken by Meg, who is sitting up and alert, and which she hasn't been in days, and staring at them with her eyes really wide, growling like a dog. And they're looking at her like, what? And then all of a sudden, like a horror movie, she crawls on all fours, lunges at Brad and starts clawing at his face and like screaming and growling like a zombie. Like Deborah said, it was like a zombie was attacking him. He pushes her off. And she sits in the middle of the dinghy just talking gibberish. Like Deborah said, it sounded like she was talking in tongues. Like she's just going, and then she starts, you know when you and I do that funny thing where we pretend we're a fetus? We like float our hands in the air. So Deborah said she kind of started doing that and she was just looking at, it was like she, her fingers were magical. Like she was just couldn't stop staring at them. And Deborah was like, oh my God, we're watching someone die. Like she's dying. And so she's just talking to herself and acting weird. And Brad and Deborah fall asleep. And when they wake up in the morning, Meg is dead in the bottom of the dinghy. And then she and Brad are like, okay, we have to have this conversation. Is there any feasible way we can butcher and eat her? Because we are starving. And then they're like, we really can't, not because they can't, like, you know, morally or whatever, but because they're like, she died of blood poisoning. Like to she's eat her body would basically.
Toxic.
It would be to eat something toxic. So they're like, well, we just, she's not edible anyway. So they decide, they also decide they need to get her off the dinghy because she's just, her flesh is rotting and she's poison. And so they take all her clothes off and her jewelry off because they think maybe her family will want them. And they have her naked on the edge of the dinghy. They say a few words. They said they say the Lord's Prayer and then they just gently roll her into the water and then they immediately like lie down in the boat because they don't want to see the sharks take her. But about 30 seconds later, they start hearing the flashing, like splashing frenzy and so they know what's happening.
This is so much darker than I could have imagined it was going to be.
I know. Do you understand now how I don't know how to name it? Like I honestly don't know what to call it. Yeah, I don't know what I'm going to title this episode.
The Survivors of the Trash Man.
I don't know.
The Trash Man Disaster.
Later that day, Deborah and Brad decide they need to try and flip the dinghy over because the water in the bottom is definitely making them sick. Like it's just filled with bacteria, all that gross stuff. And so they're like, you know what, we're at risk of sharks, but if we do it really fast, if we just flip it, the water will come out, flip it back, quickly get in, hopefully, you know, it's worth the risk because this water's going to kill us, this disgusting pus-filled blood water. So Brad is standing up on the edge of the dinghy and he's pulling it and as he's pulling it, he falls into the water and he doesn't have the energy to pull himself back into the dinghy and Deborah doesn't have the energy to pull him into the dinghy and he's like screaming, help me, the sharks. And she just is so defeated. She crawls over to the other side of the dinghy and is just staring at him crying. Like she just doesn't know what to do. And then suddenly...
Dunna.
He musters the strength and manages to hoist himself in.
I can't tell you how tense I've been for the last 30 minutes listening to this.
I know. And he is pissed at her because he was like, we had this promise. We were going to help each other. And we've had this alliance for 5 days now. And this is their fifth day there. And the alliance they've had just at that point collapses because he's like, F you, you just were going to let me die. And so then they move to opposite ends of the dinghy and they're like suspicious of each other. And it reminds me of that episode of The Simpsons where Mr. Burns and Homer are stuck in the log cabin. And at first they really get along, but then by the end they're like at war and like hiding in opposite ends, like just staring at each other. That's kind of what they did, but on opposite ends of the dinghy. And so they pretty much just sit there in silence and wait to die because the only thing that really had kept them alive until this point was each other. And then Deborah hears Brad say, oh, my God, Deborah, a ship. And she's like, there is no ship. Like, you're delirious. Stop going on about the ships. We're never going to get to them anyway. And he's like, no, Deborah, look, a ship. And she turns around and there is a ship, like, 50 meters away from them, this huge ship. And they start waving and this crew member looks at them like, what the F? And then all these other crew members come out and they're like, what? And so they like throw like a the blow up tire on the rope, the life raft.
Life ring, lifesaver.
Life ring, yeah. Yes, that. Mm. They throw that in. Deborah just jumps out of the dinghy, starts swimming towards it. Brad's like, okay, and he starts swimming towards it. They grab onto it. They are winched up onto this ship. Mm. And then they realize from them talking that it's Russians, they're Russian soldiers, and they just lay them gently down on the deck.
Mm.
And I love because it was the 80s and they're American. Deborah's like, I realized they were Russian and I didn't even care. She's very sweet. They were kind of hating each other at the time, I think.
Well, the Cold War was still going on,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, I think. I don't know about dates of things.
Do you know where they actually washed up? Like, were they still in American waters or?
Yes, they were. So they obviously survived.
Mm.
And they had gone about something like 140 or 50 kilometres out to sea. So and when you're in a yacht, you're generally pretty close to the coastline. And the reason the Coast Guard had not come looking for them is because somebody radioed from their yacht, ignore the last order, we don't need rescuing, like, stand down, we've got it sorted. So
what?
They think that it was maybe Mark because he was the one who was angriest about the fact they were, like, giving in and asking for help.
His male pride
stopped
them from being rescued. This whole thing could have been avoided if it weren't for his ego. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So Brad went on to become a boat captain and spent his career doing that and often sailed the exact same route that they had sailed. Deborah wrote a book about her experience called Albatross, The True Story of a Woman's Survival at Sea, which was like a hit at the time. And she did the rounds, like she did Larry King, she did all the shows. She became a motivational speaker. Her book was turned into the film Two Came Back with Melissa Joan Hart and Jonathan Brandis, who was also a bit of a heartthrob back then.
I remember him, yeah.
Yes, it's very, his story is quite sad, actually, Jonathan Brandis.
He was Sequest, was that?
He was in Sequest. He was also in the original telemovie of It. He was one of the kids in the first
one.
He was also in Sequest. The episode I watched of I Shouldn't Be Alive was filmed in 2005. Brad was still a boat captain then, although I guess probably would have retired by now if these guys were born in the 50s-ish.
Oh, for sure. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. Deborah died in 2012. She was 54. It's not revealed in her obituary how she died, but I did a bit of digging because I wanted to know, and you can find it if you look. So I won't say here because I think, you know, her family kept it out of the obituary for a reason. But, but yes, she died in 2012, age 54, which is very sad. That's very young.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the story of one of the craziest survival tales I've ever heard.
It would be really hard for anyone to top that. Yes, that was wild.
When I was watching this on I Shouldn't Be Alive, I was just like, oh, they're sink and they'll be at sea. But it just keeps getting, and then this happens, and then this happens, and then this happens, and then you're like, what? How can one more terrible thing happen? Like, it's just, awful.
Whenever I hear stories like this or watch movies with this sort of plot line, I'm constantly thinking to myself, okay, at what point would I just end it for myself? And I know that that sounds really morbid, but at some point pretty early on probably, I would have just tossed myself to the sharks.
Dude, do you want to know what's more morbid than that? I know whenever I ask myself that question, 20 minutes in.
Yeah.
Like whenever I watch things like The Walking Dead or disaster movies, or I'd be like, you know what, When would I give it all in, give it all up? And it would just be very, very early in the piece, let me tell you.
Same. I'm just not a fighter like that.
me either. I'm just like, I'm good.
Oh, I mean, even just being in a boat in the middle of a storm is torture, if you've ever experienced that. Have you?
Well, I've been on a boat I get incredibly badly seasick. So I can be on a boat that's even rocking the tiniest bit and it's torture. But I've been on a boat in extremely scary, rocky seas. Mm. And I think if I wasn't sick out of my mind, I would have been scared. But I was just concentrating on the fact I was vomiting every 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Have you?
Big mess up. One time I went on a 10-day sailing trip around the Whitsundays and pre-internet kind of, so sort of similar technology levels. My uncle misunderstood the weather prediction and so he parked us for the night in a bay that then just got hit straight on by a really wild storm. So the waves were like 6 meters and the boat was just being tossed around in this, like, you literally, you could not move, and where you were, like, you'd just try to lie down in the bed and literally rolling from side to side in the bed all night long because you couldn't get up and move the boat until daybreak. And even that, had I had access to some sort of firearm, I probably would have opted out at that stage.
Yeah.
And
no
that's
thanks.
Without all of the septicemia and the zombies and the
I'm the same.
Threats.
No thanks.
No,
not interested. Not worth it. Bye.
So wild.
I'm Audi 5000.
But
so yeah, that's that. Hopefully by Friday I'll figure out what to call this bloody thing. It's just nuts. Maybe I should call it that. Trust me, it's just nuts.
Yeah. Do you know why Deborah called her book Albatross?
No. I figured it had some meaning about the sea.
Mm-hmm.
Do albatrosses survive? Albatrossy?
I thought they were just big birds who did big poops.
Oh, I thought they were a fish. Oh.
We'll look into that.
Failed us. We'll look into that. Yeah. Okay, cool. That was it.
Wow.
That was mine.
I'm
going
to be thinking about that for days.
Yeah, it's nuts. And go and watch the episode of I Shouldn't Be Alive. It's on Amazon Prime. It's series one, episode one. So they started with a biggie.
Mm-hmm.
It's good. It's really good. And the reenactments are a bit cheesy, but just very satisfying to watch. And Deborah and Brad both tell the story, as their 2005 selves. And they're both very compelling storytellers. So they tell the story really well about what happened to them. It's crazy.
I'm on board. Love it.
Yeah. All right. Well, love ya. And see you again next week.
Cheers, honey.
Bye.
Bye.